Our guest, Questlove, is the co-founder and drummer of The Roots. In the world of hip-hop, where most music is sampled, The Roots stand out for playing instruments. In GQ, rock critic Tom Moon wrote, quote, "The Roots' vision for black music tears out in radical directions, encompassing jazz, trance, rock, and Brazilian pop. From the beginning, this group of jazz heads and rhyme warriors has done things differently. They're a band, for starters, working in a genre in which musicians were once thought irrelevant. Their orbit has included activist rappers and rock stars, anyone grappling with what it means to be black and alternative," unquote. Here's a track from their CD, Phrenology. This is The Seed 2.0 with guest vocalist Cody Chestnut. Terry spoke to Questlove in 2003. Also known as Amir Thompson, Questlove co-founded The Roots in 1987 when he was a student at the Philadelphia High School for Creative and Performing Arts.
When The Roots first started, you know, hip-hop really wasn't that elaborate an arrangement. I'm talking about hip-hop circa 1984, 85, 86. I mean, it's pretty much just a drum beat, a simple drum beat, and a stab. A stab would be sort of like the exclamation point at the end of a sentence. Bam! You know, it could be scratched in or just like some sort of noise, mm-hmm. an enforcement noise. And, you know, so in high school, pretty much Black Thought, well, Tariq Trotter would, you know, come up to me and just name any popular song at that time and point and just say, yo, play Top Billing. And, you know, because it was a drum arrangement, I knew how to play it. And that was, like, the most amazing thing to him. He could play Top Billing. He could play, you know, The Bridge Is Over. He could play, you know, just naming all these songs, and I could play them. I kind of thought it was natural.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop you right there, because that's kind of interesting. Since you came up in the era of sampling, as an actual musician, your friends expected you to basically play the samples. You're still expected
exactly.
to play, but you're still expected to play like other people's music.
Right. Well, I mean, that's hip hop is audio pop art. Really, it's just a collage of other ideas. And even at the time, I didn't know that. Okay, sampling is the proper term for it. For the hip hop nation, pretty much the first introduction to real sampling that we've ever seen was this episode of The Cosby Show when Stevie Wonder runs over the Huxtables' car with his limousine. Well, not that violent, but, you know, he invites them to a studio session. And for the first time, America got to see the process of sampling, in which you say something and it's repeated back to you. And after me and my friend saw that episode, we were begging for whatever that machine was called. We didn't know what it was called. You know, like in our heads, it was sort of like the Flintstone episode where, you know, like the little bird is inside of the machine and recreating the noise. And we didn't know how in the world that happened. So just during Christmas, Casio happened to make a product called an SK-1 machine, which allowed you about maybe 3 or 4 seconds worth of sampling time. And, you know, me and all my friends got this little toy keyboard for Christmas. And, you know, you mess around with it a little while. You do all, like, all the curse words, you know, and all that stuff. And then you start getting serious about it. And that's when I would, like, run to the basement where my drum set was and try and cram in 8 bars worth of drum breaks within 3 seconds, which, you know, you have to be pretty fast to do it.
Right.
And then I just, you know, realized the endless possibilities of a sampler.
Well, while we're talking about musicianship and sampling, I thought this would be a good time to play Rock You from your new CD, Phrenology, because you're actually playing on this, but you're playing more or less a rhythm line from Queen's We Will Rock You. But again, you're not sampling
well,
it.
Inspired,
you're playing
but,
it,
yeah,
and you're, you're reinterpreting it, too.
It's inspired by it, but some artists are a little iffy about sample clearances, so.
Got it. Anything else you want to say about Rock You?
In case the Lords are listening.
Right. Anything else you want to say about Rock You?
Rock You is just our mission statement. You know, the roots are so associated with just a mellow atmosphere. I thought it was real important to start off the album with an exclamation point, you know. So Rock You is our mission statement for the album.
Okay, that's right.
Okay.
Niggas in a real strange way, schmucks, ducks and half-hearted pranks to cruise. Willie Dack, Langston, Hughes, Pushanks and Cruz. I debut to make the news and I've been killing it since. Still in the trench, buzzing off the chiller suspense. I want my niggas out that barbed wire, still in the fence. Verbal assassin, I'm a killer, still in the sense. Rhymes is graphic, aiming straight at your mind. Then blast that weak the pieces and particles of fragments, mad vocabulary. Yes, I must confess, I'm like Nitty trying to sink a slug in Elliot's chest. Just tapes on that.
That's The Roots from their new CD, Phrenology. My guest is Questlove, the drummer of the group, and one of the founders. The word niggas is used on the track that we just heard.
Right.
When is it okay with you, and when is it not okay with you to use the word?
You know, I could play the politically correct term and say, you know, well, okay, we know it's wrong, but I mean, but basically, I think with black people, we pretty much will turn any tragedy into a term of endearment. So, you know, is it right? You know, I don't know if it's right or if it's wrong. You know, personally, I don't think that black people haven't made up that term, but I think that we've turned it around and just it's just another, I guess, like colloquialism for brother. To us, you know,
mm-hmm.
What's up, my nigga? How you doing? You know,
did you grow up with it that way?
Pretty much. I mean, it was natural. I mean, there, you know, the difference between if you're being referred to as, you know, my brother, or if it's using a condescending term,
mm-hmm.
You know.
You started playing drums when you were in high school, yes?
No, actually,
earlier
I started
than that?
When I was 2.
Oh, okay.
I was 2 years old. I started The Roots when I was in high school. My father is an oldies doo-wop singer from the Philadelphia area.
Lee Andrews of Lee Andrews and the Hearts.
Yeah, Lee Andrews and the Hearts. So I pretty much, my childhood is pretty much based just backstage at doo-wop extravaganza shows, you know, like Dick Clark Presents, you know, and it would be like 10 groups, Don and Wine, Harvey and the Moonglows, The Tokens, you name it. If they were from the 50s or the 60s, it would just be a big show at either like Madison Square Garden or the Spectrum or out in the Forum in L.A. So pretty much that's I grew up backstage
Leandro's,
all these groups.
Leandro's biggest hit, I think, was Teardrops in 1957.
Teardrops.
Yeah,
57. Yeah, 57.
Would you be willing to sing a few lines from it just to refresh listeners' memories?
I wouldn't want to scare your listeners, though.
Okay, well, how about this? How about we play a little bit of it?
We can do that, yeah.
I sit in my room looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals, they cover my window pane. I'm thinking of our lost romance and how it should have been. Oh, if we only could start over again. I know you never forgive me, dear, for running out on you. I was wrong to take a chance with somebody new. I sit in my room looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals, they cover my window pane. I know you never.
Okay, so that's Leandra's and the Hearts. So you grew up, you know, backstage and watching your father perform. What sense did it give you of what the music life was like? And then you probably watched your father kind of drop out of sight after the doo-wop era was over. So you also knew what it was like to no longer be in the limelight after having been in it as a young man.
I mean, I was born in the 70s, so pretty much I came along.
Oh, you came along in the...
It really wasn't about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't you often wonder if there's going to be like old school rap shows? Like,
oh, there is right now.
Is there already?
Totally. And the thing with hip hop is the motto for hip hop is definitely here today and gone today. So
yeah, I know what you mean.
Anything under 5 years is pretty much considered old school. This weekend I was listening to a popular New York radio station, and they were like, now, back in the day, Wu-Tang Clan, da-da-da-da, old school. I was like, wait a minute, Wu-Tang? That's 6 years ago.
Right.
It's like 6-7 years ago. You know, old school to me is, okay, maybe we can say, like, Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On, like a song that's definitely over 20 years old or something, you know, near 30 years old. But, yeah, pretty much in the hip-hop, it's here today and it's gone today.
Now, the Roots are from Philly, and for a lot of rappers, like, the place they're from becomes like mythologized through their raps.
Right.
What do you think you've done, like, to create a Philadelphia in your music?
Well, Philadelphia had sort of a bad/nondescript reputation between
in hip hop. You mean, because there was the Philly sound before that.
Yeah, I'm just talking in terms of hip hop.
Mm-hmm,
even though, I'll say two of the major important factors of hip hop history have originated in Philadelphia. Number one, gangster rap. Pretty much, there's debate as to whether Ice-T, who's from L.A., or Schoolie D, who's from 52nd and Parkside. Was the first quote-unquote gangster rapper. And pretty much anybody that's familiar with Schoolie D can give you pretty much an account of where they were the first time they ever heard his classic, PSK, What Does It Mean? You know, because we just never heard a rap that explicit. You know, pretty much hip-hop before then was about partying. And, you know, there were some reality rhymes here and there, you know, the message by Grandmaster Flash, and maybe it's like mm-hmm. that by Run DMC. But, you know, pretty much everyone's been, like, politically correct. You didn't hear that much profanity, that much cursing, and that much honesty. You know, Schoolie D talked like your older cousin on the corner, you know, or the guys that you knew down the street on the corner. And, you know, he was very influential to a lot of of people, the Beastie Boys, and the list goes on.
So what's your image of Philly in your music?
Well we had to take that, and well, let me just quickly say that the other important element was the art of DJing. Philadelphia has four very important pioneers in DJing. Jazzy Jeff, DJ Cash Money, DJ Miz, and DJ Cheese, all from the tri-state area. And they're pretty much the standard for which DJs today are basing their skills on when you talk about DJs doing the Lukman hand tricks and whatnot.
Okay, and one final question.
Yes.
How come you wear an afro?
Because I'm secretly a Chia Pet.
I won't sing the theme.
right.
Yeah.
My hair just grows. I come from a family that, you know, I don't have a patient. I don't have the patience nor the time to go to a barbershop and get it cut every 3 seconds. So my hair just grows. It's always been problematic for me. Just thank God it's in style now. Imagine me trying to get through this hairstyle in the late 80s and the early 90s, you know. Back then I could do a flat top thing, but no, I keep it. It's my crown, you know. It's sort of symbolic now, but yeah, it was a problem back in the day. You know, people staring at me like, oh my God. You know, now it's no thing because everyone has it.
Besides you're you, so
yeah, exactly.
You can do it now.
I'm an individual.
That's right. Thank you so much.
Or one of the Missing Jacksons. All right, thank you.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Tara.
Our interview with Questlove was recorded in 2003. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.